Would you ask Pop that question?
In honor of Black History Month.
Black History Month.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
I want to share with you some of the people who impacted my life and my game. My wife of 27 years, Denitri. She's given me three great kids. A boy by the name of Cameron Danley, who plays football. Why he plays football, I don't know why. I don't know why. I love all you guys. To my mother, Virginia, I can remember when she asked me, what is a rebound?
What is a rebound?
Now, she wants to know who should be plugging on a pick and roll. She instilled honesty.
She instilled honesty.
Loyalty. A respect for myself so I can respect others. She would say, do not embarrass yourself or me in the public. Aunt Rosie, my second mom and number one fan. To my grandmother, she would always tell me, read with a third eye, listen with a third ear. To my grandpa, he would tell me, Adrian, you're a basketball player. You're not a track and field star.
While being coached by Morgan, Frank Fuqua instructed me on my footwork.
I patterned my first step after my idol, Elgin Bell. I copied Chet Walker's head and pump fakes. Everybody always went
for it. I scored a lot of points on that move.
I remember as a ninth grader meeting Red Auerbach,
who advised me I hit it.
He said, Adrian, John Hamlichak weighs 205. You should weigh 210. My best years as a player is when I weighed 210 pounds. The first college coach I met as a freshman was Coach Bobby Knight. He used me to demonstrate how to take a charge and dive for loose balls.
He said,
if I work hard, I would be a great player. Coincidentally, my first college recruit letter was from Coach Knight when he was at West Point. During my senior year, my mother told me, boy, you going to Indiana or North Carolina? I said,
what would you do with a brain if you had one?
They got a guy at Indiana, Scott May, and North Carolina run the four corners. There's a slot for me, though, at Notre Dame, so I end up signing with Digger.
On the weekends, I would look forward to playing basketball
on Luzon Playground in Washington, D.C. Afterwards, I would sit on the hill and listen to John Thompson tell stories about basketball and about life. I learned a lot. The 1976 Olympics, I had the pleasure of playing under Dean Smith. I learned to make
every possession count.
Cheap possessions. It must be a North Carolina thing because I hear it every day.
From my boss, George Call.
A guy who helped my game at a young age, an Olympian, an All-American at St. Joe. His name was Mike Banner. He was my roommate at the University of Maryland's
basketball camp.
We would work hard every day for a month. And at night, he predicted both of us will become a number one draft choice.
A prediction.
Dave Bing, a fellow Washingtonian who I met when I was a rookie. He called me when I didn't make the Hall of Fame, and he called me this year to congratulate me. The road to the Hall of Fame has not been easy
or smooth.
I had to remain focused through the changes and the trades while constantly proving that I belong,
in this game.
But I believed in myself. I didn't travel this road alone. Time won't allow me to acknowledge
individually
all the coaches, trainers, and many players I've come to know.
Why, if I had a brain, I could...
Played on a lot of teams. Throughout my playing career, the critics said I was too short, too fat, and too slow. And that meant short players get short money. And this was said by someone 5'2". I was even said that I was a bastard size. B-A-S-T-A-R-D. Because I wasn't quick enough, play in the backcourt,
not big enough to play in the front court.
But what they forgot to mention is that I had a B-R-A-I-N,
a brain,
a heart, a work ethic, and a will to win. These values serve me on the basketball court
and in the game
and in the game of life. This is a day that I always will cherish. Thank you.
In honor of Black History Month.
Black History.
If I had a brain, I could...
Welcome to the Athletic NBA Show, Monday through on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Hashtag give the kid a vote.
Bruh. New York strip steak?
Ooh. This is the Basketball Buds.
Braised beef short ribs? Dang!
Favorite athletic writer.
Get mad at me, bro. I'm gone.
Yeah, buddy. Welcome to the Basket Buds edition of the Athletic NBA Show podcast on the Athletic Podcast Network. I'm Zach Harper. We got Jake King. We got Mo Dakhil. We got a skeleton crew. because we're doing this on the fly. We're not going to record on Sunday because it's Super Bowl Sunday and people are games to go to, and games to watch, and parties and venues to hit and all that crap, right? So we're not going to do that. We're recording this on the Saturday before, so 2 days before this podcast comes out. So if something happens Saturday night or Sunday, our bad.
A minute, 60 seconds from doing that right now.
No, you're not.
I am.
Not.
Congratulations to the Rams on winning the Super Bowl. Jay, just cut whichever one
Joe
you need
Burrow
to.
Had a crazy
Joe
game.
Burrow had a crazy game. Good or bad?
Aaron.
Yeah. Who knows? Who knows? Who knows if he even showed up to the game? For all we know,
Jamar Chase did that thing.
Jamar Chase did do that thing. Good or bad? Who knows? But we're recording this on Saturday, so we miss have a little gap here. You know, Sam Ayuk will cover it on tampering on Tuesday. We'll just put the blame on him. All right. We are post-deadline. In the NBA, post-trade deadline in the NBA, obviously the biggest news that came from that was the James Harden, Paul Millsap for Ben Simmons, Seth Curry, Andre Drummond, and two first-round picks. That's the deal that went down that we were all kind of hoping for this resolution to the great saga of Ben Simmons and the great saga of James Harden that had just popped up.
Thank God it's
that
over.
That was either something he was worried about getting out or something he was screaming to the organization to trade him. It depends on which reporter you want to believe here. So we don't need to take sides here. Hashtag Team Wendy. But what we will do is get into this. So something I found fascinating is once this trade was done, once the trade had happened, I'm actually a little surprised at how many people analyzing the game, and some of this is, you know, media. Some of this is former player, former coaches who are in media. But I actually saw a lot of people now souring on the James Harden existence in Philly, whereas before that, I didn't really feel like it was going that way. But now maybe it's because of the trade package that was given up. I'm not quite sure. Daryl Morey did kind of give in here, right? He gave up Seth Curry, who was a phenomenal weapon, and he gave up two first-round picks. And I think it's actually the right call, at least for the pick standpoint. I don't know that I would have given up Seth, but whatever. That's a debate that we can get into another time. But Mo, I know you've been a little cautious about the James Harden existence next to Joel Embiid. Do you think this is overall being received as a good move by the Sixers, or a move that is, you know, fraught with despair that's coming?
I mean, we should be honest. Saying I was cautious is probably a little bit of an understatement. I've been screaming, don't do this. Don't do this. Please don't. This is not a good idea. And I kind of feel like I'm in the minority. I actually feel like a lot of people are more into the idea of they think this is going to be the best pick and roll we've ever seen and all of that stuff. I think there's a lot of that, but there's two camps. I think there is a lot of people who feel the way I do, and there's a lot of people that feel the way, and more people feel the way that, like, hey, this was a good thing. They got something for a guy that wasn't playing at all. They, you know, they're not going to waste a Joel Embiid season. They're going all in. This is what we want to see from teams. I think that's what kind of the reaction I think we're getting from most people. But to your point too, of like everybody kind of like trashing this now, I think part of it has to do with just how Harden has looked the past 2 weeks, and also nobody really likes Daryl Morey.
Really? Because I don't know, Jay. I find, at least maybe in the former player, former coach standpoint, I agree that people don't like Daryl Morey. I feel like people are sucking up to Daryl Morey constantly in the media, though, because allegedly information gets passed on, you know. Allegedly.
What?
Yeah, I know. It's a crazy thing.
No.
But I don't find, I guess it just depends on what area of basketball Twitter you're interacting with, but I don't find Morey to be someone everyone hates. Maybe they were just tired of him in this Ben Simmons situation though, Jay.
So my thing is this. I think the Nets, like, they had to do this. Because Harden clearly wanted out of there.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And made it clear with his play he wanted out of there, made it clear with his actions he wanted out of there.
And Hammy.
And it's gotten to the point where I think Sam Amick wrote this. Like, if Harden makes it known he wants out of there, like, you gotta move him because he is going to fuck shit up for your organization. And so I think for the Nets, like, ceiling wise, this is a downgrade for them. Like, there's a major gap between James Harden at his best and Ben Simmons at his best, or Ben Simmons and Seth Curry at their best. But you have to do it because Harden put you in a situation where you had to move him. Mm-hmm. And then because Harden was like that, and because of the way he's played recently, now people are looking at him like, okay, he's older. He's, what is he, 31 or 32 now. He clearly has a lot of miles. He clearly is someone who's at least slowed down a half step or whatever this year, even though I still think he's going to look a lot better once he gets to a place where he actually wants to be. But there's a lot of risk there that maybe we didn't associate with Harden before. And I think that's why people are a little down from the 76ers perspective, is because not only is there the risk that maybe his best basketball is behind him, but there's also the risk that, like, this dude seems to be extremely disgruntled, or at least, like, he's always potentially a few months away from being extremely disgruntled. So the Sixers, they gave themselves a championship window here. They weren't winning a title with Simmons, I think. They weren't winning a title without him,
right,
and with nobody else there. So they've given themselves a championship window, but it might just be shorter than they had wanted.
Yeah, I think I agree with that. I also think we tend to just overly fantasize about how long a reign could last, right? We did it with the Heat. We did it with the Warriors. We did it with the Thunder when they had, you know,
LeBron did it with the Heat too.
Well, for sure. Yeah, I think he might have started that. I always go back to this. Like, we're in the Thunder made the finals in 2012. We're like, oh my God, they're gonna be here for the next decade, and never got back. Right. Oh my God, the Warriors have ruined basketball for three seasons, and one of them didn't end in the title because they got hurt. We tend to think way too long term with this stuff. And I do think, like, I do believe in emphasizing the short term rather than the long term with a lot of these situations. Now, I wouldn't go full Billy King, right, and just give away every pick unprotected and every pick swap unprotected. Like, I wouldn't do that. But I do think there's a middle ground there where we have fetishized, like, having draft picks. And what that means for an organization, especially when it comes to second round draft picks, right? Like, I saw something with the Alexander Walker trade where, like, once the Blazers gave him up to Utah and got a second round pick, people are like, well, you know, they got a second round pick out of it. I'm like, that doesn't mean anything. Like, Walker can play now, right? He can play now on a good team. Now, he may not be consistent or good, but he's a rotation dude now. A second round pick maybe makes the team. Right. So we do emphasize way too much long term stuff at this point. But for the Sixers, like, you're right. They didn't have a window at this point. Once all that shit happened in game seven between them and the Hawks, their window closed. I think they had a window before that. The window closed at that moment and they needed a resolution. They at least have a window now. Now, maybe James Harden can't fit through that window, but they do have a window that has been opened, and that's going to be on them to figure out. So I do think it's a good move for them.
There's a couple of things you said there. This whole thing about the second round picks, like, because, you know, Jokic is an MVP, was a second round pick, right? Yeah. We had the thing with Draymond, everything. So we do kind of go a little bit nuts with the second round pick. You know, if your second round pick's like in the 50s, yeah, you're not getting anything. Right. Like, it's you didn't give up anything. But the thing for me is they got their championship window, but they've also made the other teams better, right? Like, now Brooklyn has also
agreed.
A much, like, if I, and I understand everything that we have to deal with Brooklyn, right? Like, but if Brooklyn becomes whole by the playoffs, you know, however it happens, I'm picking them over Philly. Like, I think they're a better team. I think Milwaukee's still a better team. Like, this is going to be an interesting dynamic. I think Miami beats
there
Philly.
There it is. There's the culture chatter I was waiting for.
You've been dying.
I was just waiting for you to mention Miami.
Well, you mentioned them already. And by the way, you owe me $10. Like, we talked about this before. Anytime I mention Miami, you're going to give me some cash.
I'm not sold yet on the Nets. Am I the only one not sold yet on the new look?
But you also think Ben Simmons sucks. So
yes.
No. So that's not true at all. I think Ben Simmons at what he does is very good. He's a very good passer. He obviously can really move. He's a great defender. He's going to help that defense. My thing is, I just, as great as Kevin Durant is, I just don't know if without Kyrie for half the games and with Ben Simmons as your second best player, if he can win a title against another great team with that situation. Maybe, like, are they going to beat the Bucks? And then the other part of it is they have immense, like, the Nets shooting is going to be ridiculous.
It's absurd, man.
Seth Curry, Patty Mills, Joe Harris, assuming he gets back. Like
KD, Kyrie, right?
I haven't even talked about the two main guys there.
You know,
but they're also going to be extremely small. Like, three of their five best players are 6'3" and shorter.
Sure. Yeah. No.
And none of them are good defenders.
KD's a good defensive player again. He's been better this year than what he was probably allowed to be with his body last year, coming back from that injury. And Ben Simmons is otherworldly at defense, right? And so I think not being sold on Brooklyn right now, I get that. I don't think we should believe in them the rest of the season, right? Even if they get, I think there's so much that has to get figured out there that I think it's fine to be completely skeptical of this thing coming together on the fly. What I would say, though, is to your comment about the Sixers just made the opponent better, right? In the way they helped the Nets out here. I think it's safe to say, if the Sixers believe, and maybe this won't be, evident based on the extension they end up giving James Harden, but if the Sixers believe, okay, we just gave ourselves a 2-year window to win a title, right? And we didn't have a window before, and we gave ourselves a 2-year window. I think it's fair for them to think, well, Brooklyn's not going to figure that shit out in 2 years, right? Because you still have to get Ben Simmons up to speed. You have to get KD back and healthy. Are we convinced Kyrie's going to be allowed to play full time next year? I'm not, right? I think that's an ongoing issue. And so I think if you're Philadelphia, you think, yes, they may end up winning that trade in the long run, but we just gave ourselves an advantage over them over the next 2 years. Now, that may not end up proving to be correct, but I don't think that logic is crazy.
And it's a good year, I think, to take a short-term shot, because there's no juggernaut this year. There are some very good teams, the Nets, the Bucks, the Heat in the East, the Suns, the Warriors out West. There are some very good teams, but there's no juggernaut. So giving yourself a shot this year is different than going out and trying to do the same when there is a Warriors or a Shaq and Kobe Lakers or whoever.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, I think the Nets side of this, if they had Ben Simmons last year instead of James Harden in that Milwaukee series, do you think that they win? Because I do.
Yes. Yes. And I don't think you can really kind of argue that. I mean, just the fact that Harden was basically on one leg.
He could do nothing. Right. And Bucks barely figured that out pretty quickly. That he can't move.
And just the impact defensively of what Simmons can do
versus a one-legged Harden, right?
Two-legged Harden's not doing anything.
Sure, but especially a one-legged one, they were destroying him. They were going at him every time.
Right, and I think there's that aspect, and I think even on the offensive end, just Simmons in the short role is going to open up stuff for the Nets and would have last season. I think that's really something I think you would have gotten a lot more out of. So I think they would have won that series, and it's. I think they might have bought them the Sixers might have bought them a window for this season. I don't necessarily agree, because I think Kyrie is going to end up getting to play at least by next season. I think the way just the science is moving, I think they're going to be it's going to work out. There's no way to predict any of this, but I think
you mean Kyrie.
I mean, if it's not this, who knows what's next, right? The groundhog. Whatever, saw his shadow, he's not playing for 3 weeks, whatever, it's along those things. But just the East is stacked, and there's no way to kind of pin it in any position where it's like Cleveland's getting better, right? We don't know what they're going to be. They might struggle in the playoffs and things like that. We're going to get to it, but Boston's rolling, the Raptors are rolling, the East is stacked. So I don't feel like you can look at it going anybody's one favorite right now. You just go with the Bucks because they won it last year, but they got issues. I just
the Bucks
find
are
this
pretty damn good. even with their issues, rolling, like they're, I mean, a lot of their, I mean, a lot of their problems, I think, happen in the first month of the season.
Yeah.
Right, I mean, now, the play-in tournament in the East would be Boston, Brooklyn, the Hawks, and the Hornets.
Yeah. It's a fun time.
I'm in. Like,
can we just stop the season now? Can we just stop the season now and get that?
You know, Kevin Durant's not hurt or not healthy, right? So if we stop the season now.
Okay, fine. Okay, you're right.
We're just watching Patty Mills and Seth Curry play against Boston.
Like, how about we just stop the season now, but give it a few weeks? Like, buy KD some time.
That seems like... I personally don't worry about Washington, New York, or Indiana figuring it out and threatening this play-in tournament. I think we're...
Oh, Tyrese Halliburton! What are we talking about?
I just saw him blow a lead to Caris LeVert last night, so I'm not totally worried. And he was making horrible turnovers down the stretch. Like, I'm not totally worried about Indiana getting this thing together at this point.
It was a hell of a first quarter, though.
Amazing first quarter. Oh, my God. You turned that game off halfway through the third quarter? Well, that's a lot of Pacers games this year. If you turn off halfway through the third quarter, you feel really good about them. I do think there are issues, obviously, that Brooklyn is going to have in implementing Ben Simmons. Like, does he still consider himself a point guard that needs the ball in his hands? If so, that's going to look a lot worse here in Brooklyn than it did in Philly, because in Philly, the other answer was like, well, Joel Embiid can't, like, get the ball to himself, right? Like, he can bring the ball up occasionally, but you don't want him doing that stuff. Like, they have Kyrie, they have Seth Curry, they have Kevin Durant. Like, those are all dudes who like to bring the ball up the floor. Is Ben Simmons going to need that touch, right, early in a possession and feel like he's orchestrating things? Or is Steve Nash able to kind of meld him into whatever version of him they think they can maximize? How open to all of that is he going to be? Like, those are still fair questions to hold over this Brooklyn team.
Piece
is really interesting because, like Mo said, if you can turn Ben Simmons into some version of Draymond Green, right?
Right.
Like, where he's setting screens, he's rolling, he's being very active, he's playing off the other guys, then all of a sudden that changes the floor. But if he's not willing to do that and buy into that and let that be his role, and I'm not sure whether he is. We've never really seen him in that role, but obviously with Embiid, it's a lot different. The floor is different. What you need to do is different. So I'm open to the possibility that he'll be open to the possibility.
But I think the thing too that we kind of forget with Draymond are there's quite a few possessions where he's the one bringing the ball up the court for the Warriors
and initiates
the offense. I think you're going to get a mix of all of those things. It was just in Philly, he was rarely the screener, right? Because they just didn't have the ball handlers that could really make all of those things happen. When it did happen, he was able to find the shooters and the few that they had, Danny Green or Curry and things like that. I think you're going to just get a good mix of that stuff.
If he wants that though, right? Like, if he considers himself a point guard that needs the ball in his hands, and we don't really know that, right? Like, we had some reporting early on in this whole saga that he wants like an offense built around him and everything. I'm assuming when he goes to the team that has Kevin Durant, like that's probably when he thought he was going to end up on the fucking Kings or something, right? I'm assuming when he goes to a team that has Kevin Durant and has Kyrie Irving at least part time, he's going to look at that and be like, okay, how do I fit in? I would hope that, but we don't know that.
Well, we never know with these guys, right? Like, you never know who's going to be thinking, okay, I should have a bigger role. I mean, with all of those things, but with just, it's so much easier for him, like the so little pressure on him now, you know, for him not having to try to have that role.
So little pressure on Ben Simmons?
In terms of offensively, yes.
He has to be the second best player on a title team, just like he was in Philadelphia.
No, he doesn't. He doesn't on the offensive end. He doesn't have to carry the offensive load. He doesn't have to.
Half the games this year, and then we'll see what happens next year with what the mandates are and everything. But like, I think... I see. So with Philly, like I said, I think this is a short term solution that you maximize, hopefully. With the Brooklyn thing, even though KD's like whatever age he is, 33 or whatever, like I still think this is more of a long term projection than a what can they do right now. Like if it's just about this season, I'm with you, Jay. Like I think it's probably not coming together this season. But for next season, like I don't know. That's where I start feeling very optimistic about it.
But I would also say Philly's got to change a whole lot of things to make this thing work with Harden on the fly this season. It's not an easy plug and play with him, right? Defensively, it's a massive change because he's a switch guy. That's not a switch team. They play primarily drop coverage with Joel Embiid. I think you have a lot more, you know, Embiid's going to want a lot of post-ups. You're going to have to figure out how to make all of that work because we all know Harden doesn't move when he doesn't have the ball. Like wherever he passed the ball, that's where he's staying for the rest of the possession. Like you have a lot of challenges there on Philly's end. Like they got a lot of things to figure out,
I bet,
on the fly.
I bet Embiid is more malleable in this situation fitting Harden in than we assume. I actually don't have it. I don't think Embiid's going to, unless Harden shows up and remains like out of shape and remains like kind of just, you know, going 80% through the motions and everything. Like if that's the Harden we get, then I think Embiid ends up saying like, nah, this is my team. I got to do this, like whatever. I think if Harden shows up and he works his way into shape and we get like the effort James Harden that you would hope for, I bet Embiid is like, I don't need as many touches in the post. I don't need as many of that. Like I bet he is very malleable in that way.
Harden has also downright quit on two straight teams.
Yes.
It's outrageous. He pulled like a Vince Carter twice.
In fairness, that Rocket situation had become a mess. Like, he is 100% agreed, justified in quitting on that, right? Maybe you didn't like the way he went about it, but like, if I were him and I looked at like D'Antoni is like, nah, I'm good. And Daryl Morey is like, I think I need to spend some time away. Oh, Philly, right? Like, I think if those are the things, and then Westbrook's like, yeah, I don't want to be here either. I think that it is totally fair for Harden to look around and be like, I'm not going to be the last one in. Like, I got to get out of here. Looking at this Brooklyn situation, look, there's a lot of different ways to go about this, and I don't know that right, he chose the right ways to do it, but he did get what he wanted. And I think, like, looking at, look, we've only played 16 games together. This is not what I thought it was going to be. I don't know what the fuck Kyrie's doing over here and when he's going to be available. And, you know, if you want to go off the Joe Varden story, right, like he's sage in this locker room and I'm confused as to why and all this stuff, right? And then KD's hurt with a knee injury and looking at that and be like, well, is KD going to be back? Like, is this where I want to, like I think they're, like, I think these guys are allowed to want a situation, get there and be like, ah, shit, this is not what I thought it would be. I should get somewhere else. I know we don't generally like that kind of decision making in sports. I think it's fine. It's just, it's the way people go about it. I think that's where the issues should come up rather than the decisions themselves.
And it goes back really even before what he did at the end in Houston and what he did at the end of Brooklyn. Like, Chris Paul wanted out, didn't want to play with him. Dwight Howard wanted out, didn't want to play with him. Like, there is a long history of James Harden not working with other
absolutely
star players.
No, I'm not trying to absolve James Harden of being James Harden here. I'm not trying to do that.
That's part of the risk for Philadelphia, too. And obviously, Daryl Morey knows him better than just about anyone does.
But he might have, beer goggles when it comes to James Harden, right?
You saw the hug. We saw the hug when Harden got off the plane, man. That was just like, I've missed you so much.
I have not seen this hug. Hold on. Let me find this.
It's been like 2 years. Like, you know, we've seen the hug. It's
funny because Harden has given him like a quick little hug and he just goes right in there for the
full embrace. I'm not letting you go. I'm not letting you go. Never again. They will separate us. Like, that's, you know, that was the hug from Morey. Like, you know, I don't even mind him wanting out. I really don't. But it's like Zach was saying, it's just the way he did it. Like that performance with the Kings in the Kings game where he basically was like, yep, I'm not playing at all any defense and, you know, just going to score 4 points and 2 of 11 from the field, things like that. Like, that's the kind of stuff where I'm just like, dude, come on, man. Like, you can do all that stuff behind the scenes and still try a little bit on the defensive end and still try to play. And I think those are or just sit out or just say, hey, I'm hurt, I'm not playing. But I think those are the things that are really worrisome when it comes to Harden and the stuff. Like, I just, when it goes bad, he just has a real bad way of going about it.
I don't think this hug is what you got. You're talking about when he's first off this plane, right?
Oh yeah,
it's like a little bit of a dap and then a hug, and Harden has he also has his hand in the quick pocket. Hug. Yeah, he goes for the quick hug.
Maury's going. Maury
puts his head down a little bit on the shoulder, but for the most part, like.
But that's only because Harden pulled away, Zach. It wasn't. Yeah. If Maury, they would still be hugging right now if Maury
was
had his way.
Was it Jay or was it James Edwards III who thought Daryl Morey 6'10"?
I think that was James.
Okay, that was James. He's like, 6'10". I was like, 6'4". He's taller than you would expect, but he's not like...
There are some
photos.
But
Zach, did you really expect Jay to give you the correct answer?
I feel like James was sharing some of those.
I think James was talking about like he saw him in person. It was like, he's like 6'10". I'm like, what do you do for a living? Because it can't be looking at basketball players.
I love that you're trusting Jay to tell us if he...
No, Jay will always back up something he said, though, right? He won't like shy from it. Mayweather. I could say, like, did you say this stupid thing? He's like, I did, but it's not stupid for these reasons. Like,
he was standing on a box when I saw him.
All right, we'll start off negative. Let's go to a loser from the deadline.
That's too real. Just too real.
Spring is the best time to add new challenges to your training just in time for summer and warmer days. I know I'm looking outside right now. Sun's out, birds are chirping. It's time to start getting outside. I know that I like to get outside and play basketball with my kids. And honestly, I need to get into a fitness routine in order to keep up with these guys. And Peloton is there for me. Peloton's varying class lengths were designed with your training plan in mind. Personalize your workout, whether you'd like to add a 10-minute core session at the end of your strength class, or take a 60-minute power zone ride to increase your endurance. Peloton classes are designed to help focus on your needs and goals. Peloton's classes were made to challenge you. There are a variety of classes like boot camps, boxing, full body strength, or marathon training, all created to grow your skills or push you to improve in what you're already excelling in. Peloton's program and instruction push you to be your best. Their expert coaches and nonstop vibes will push you to new levels of strength and endurance, keeping you on your toes while giving you the professional coaching you need. Peloton has everything you need to get you where you're going. Whether you prefer to run indoors, row or ride at home, or strength train at the gym, Peloton has something for you. Get your head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
A loser from the deadline. Do you either of you guys have a loser off the top of your head from the deadline?
I think it's the Knicks not being able
not
to do anything.
Yeah.
Not doing anything. I mean, it's I don't even know what they're doing. Like, Tibbs isn't going to play any of the young guys. Like, you're struggling there, and the front office needed to make moves to just create room so that those kids can get opportunities to develop. And, you know, I think that's the big one right there, not being able to get anything done.
Wait, hold on. Tibbs won't play the young guys, or he's not playing Cam Reddish? Because those are two very different things.
Well, you know, that's fair. Yeah. He won't play Cam Reddish. Okay. And I think, you know, you gave up a first-round pick for him.
Right.
It's
and Kevin Knox. The front,
so you gave him a first round pick for him, and the you know, front office is like, yo, we need to see him play with our team. Right. Like, this is we need to make a decision here at the end of the season what we want to do going forward. It's those types of things, and he kind of just buried him and he's barely played him and things like that. And just on top of it too, you said it at the beginning of this, they're not getting into the play-in tournament. What are you doing?
I'm going to make a bold claim that's maybe not so bold.
Here we go.
I wouldn't be surprised if Thibodeau is gone after this season.
I wouldn't be surprised with that either.
Wouldn't surprise me.
There is clearly the Cam Reddish trade shows such a major disconnect between the front office and the head coach. And I think Thibodeau was like worthy coach of the year candidate. I don't even remember who won coach of the year last season.
Thibodeau.
He did? Yeah. So he was a worthy coach of the year last season. But now it's like, first of all, I don't think their roster is very good. I don't really put a lot of it on him. But also, when your front office clearly values Cam Reddish and wants him around and probably want him to be part of the rotation, they give up a first-round pick for the guy. And Tibbs is like, nope. Nope, not gonna do it. Not doing it. That usually spells trouble.
Which is funny. Like, who's playing over him in these games? It's like, I guess Burks is.
That's why it's got to be infuriating for the front office too. It's not like they're rolling, and what Tibbs is trying to do is working,
right? Because Rose hasn't played since like fucking November.
Hurt his ankle, like, right? Yeah. But
yeah, that's confusing.
You're 3-7.
And I don't
in your
think Cam Reddish is good. Like, I happen to be with Tibbs on this one. Like, he's intriguing long term, but right now, like, I don't think he's
right.
Good.
But if you're playing like Quentin Grimes over him,
Quentin Grimes is nice.
Okay.
But I think what's funny about this was when Tibbs was hired, it was him and Leon Rose were, you know, his former agent. They go way back. We all kind of knew this was who was going to be hired the second Rose got that job. And now it's just funny, in year two, you already have that disconnect. Yeah. And when you have that, it's hard to really come back from it. So if he's not fired at the end of this year, or if it's not, he's not out of there, he's going to have a short leash, I think, starting next season.
Hey, man, Julius Randle stops playing like a star, it all falls apart. Like, that shit was a house of cards, right? Yep. And he was the only card holding it up. And then he's not very good this year. And that thing looks so different. It feels so different.
And the fringe work that they try to do, I guess Fournier for them, the amount they spent on him wasn't really a fringe move, but like the Kemba signing hasn't panned out.
Yeah.
The like Reggie Bullock was a big piece for them.
Mitchell Robinson is a disaster defensively.
Fournier hasn't been very good this year. Like Nerlens Noel, who was very good defensively for them. Like, I don't know how many games he's played this year.
Like 25.
So yeah. So there's a lot that's gone wrong for them, but everything went right for them last year. And yeah, I feel like everyone knew they were going to regress to the mean except for the Knicks.
But I think regressing this hard is a bit of a surprise, right?
Yeah, I think they expected a step back, but not like Zach was saying. I don't think they expected to be out of the whole play-in tournament.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Like I think if they slid into the play-in tournament, they'd be like, it's okay, we feel good about this, this, and this, right? And we're building this, this, and that. But yeah, the disconnect with Tibbs in the front office, like that's a real thing. And you're seeing it in a lot, like you saw it with the Kemba thing back in, what was that, December, right? The only reason he got back in the rotation is because they needed bodies.
Yeah.
Like that's really the only reason
you see RJ Barrett after playing like tons and tons of minutes, checks back in at the end of a bad
blowout.
Loss
blowout.
And gets hurt.
Yeah.
And gets hurt.
Stupid.
And then
just dumb.
Like, so there's just little stuff like that. And I guess that's not really a little thing, but stuff like that, it's like sometimes Tibbs is going to tip.
Yeah. Jay, what's a loser of the deadline for you?
The Lakers, man. The Lakers. They're
it's
like,
more a loser of the offseason, right? Like, what were they supposed to do with the deadline?
But I'm just saying, they, like, there's no hope. Literally zero hope. They had a team that went into the deadline, was clearly checked out. They have Russell Westbrook getting benched in the fourth quarter, then making crazy comments to the press like, oh, my back was hurt. That's because I'm not so used to sitting as for such long stretches.
What a line.
He's coming out and being like, oh, man. I don't want to call it passive aggressive because it's pretty just aggressive. But so there are clear problems there. They did nothing to address it. I don't think there was anything they could have done to salvage this season, but also the fact that they just didn't try or just decided nothing and just like threw their hands in the air and decided, you know, we're going to go forward with this bunch is just, I laughed. I literally laughed out loud. when whoever reported the news that the Lakers were going to sit tight, I laughed out loud.
That was funny.
By myself. I was sitting there at my table, just like tears streaming down my face.
I also, well, real quick, I just want to let you guys know, I'm going to unveil some news in my world. I have decided not to pursue Eva Mendes. Okay. Just want to let you know, I'm going to sit out that one.
That's a tough one.
Are you guys shocked that Taylor Horton Tucker and 2027 first round pick didn't
touch much?
You know
what? I would take that 2027 first round pick just because, like, that might be
a top three pick. The Rockets tried. They offered.
Yeah.
The rumors are they offered John Wall for Russ and that pick. Yeah. You know, like they were trying, and you know, let's give the Lakers credit at least not giving up that pick. But you know what that means, guys? They're just gonna give away two picks in the offseason. That's all. You know, they're just like, we can't give this one up now. We're gonna wait till the offseason and send you, and not just send one, but two.
Guess they've been paying attention to those John Wall workouts, man. He looks good. Yeah. I will keep bringing that up until he gets a job somewhere. He looks good. He is dunking with that left hand like he used to in his prime. Oh man, I'm all in on the John Wall assaults.
He was so good for a couple years, man.
Oh, he's fantastic. He was electric. That dude would cross over in stride. In like at full speed, fast break, and completely just leave a defender in the dust. And they had no idea how that happened. Like, I mean, he was so just fun.
Burn anybody so and then good. Cross court pass to the opposite corner, wide open guys. Like,
so fun.
He was fun to watch. For like a couple years. And then he was awful to watch at the end of Washington.
Yeah, he was hurt though. Like, I mean,
those once your knees go, it kind of when your game is speed and you know,
it's
you hurt
one.
The knees, it's tough to recover from that.
I'm open to the idea that I'm going to be wrong on this. Okay, I don't feel strongly about it. I don't like what Dallas did.
That was a weird one.
No problem with them getting rid of Porzingis like that. Like, it clearly wasn't what they wanted it to be. I wouldn't want to pay him that money. Like, are we convinced Davis Bertans is going to be good again? I'm not.
No, and I don't think they are.
And if he is going to be good, it's going to be with someone like Luka.
For sure. That's a great point. Like if anyone's going to bring it back, it's going to be Luka. And then bringing in Dinwiddie, who I don't think is as bad as he's been in Washington. Like, I think he's going to improve. But is that because you think the three of them can play together with him, Luka, and Jalen Brunson? Or is this insurance in case Jalen Brunson is too expensive this offseason when he's an unrestricted free agent? And if that's the case, I'd rather just pay the money to Jalen Brunson and keep him around. And so I just thought it was two weird contracts to bring on. It doesn't help with their flexibility. And it may all this criticism may not matter because Luka looks like he's in shape now. Like, Luka's killing right now. And so he is so good right now.
In a post-game interview, and I was like, yo, he looks like his body is transformed.
He looks like he just got traded from Houston to Brooklyn. Like, that's the body transformation.
I was more surprised seeing him in the post-game interview just because he looked so skinny.
Yeah. No, he looks amazing.
I don't know why
it
looked skinnier in the post-game interview than it did on the court.
He's playing his ass off. And so this deal could end up being something that doesn't make any sense on the court, and it doesn't matter because Luka's just that good. So I'm open to that idea, but I just thought, like, and not that I thought they should necessarily be able to get anything for Kristaps. I just thought the fits were weird with what they brought in.
I think the only thing that I do think Dinwiddie will play better, but I also really, really believe that Bertans could be a lot different next to Luka. Mm-hmm. Like, I think there's a chance, like, we saw a lot of during, you know, LeBron's younger years, especially, you surround him with any shooters and they're going to have career years, like Booby Gibson, J.R. Smith, whoever. It didn't matter. You give him guys who could make shots, they're going to have career years. And Bertans is an elite shooter, and he hasn't always been like that lately. I think he was out of shape for a while. He dealt with some stuff, but if he can just make, he's going to be more wide open than he's been ever next to Luka. And I think that if that pans out, then he could be a weapon for them.
For me, my view of it for the Mavs wasn't so much the talent as much as, hey, let's just break up Porzingis's contract.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right. Like, just think about it this way. This was the only return they could get for Porzingis, right? They're lucky they didn't have to attach a draft pick and things like that. So for them, their thinking is like, this is me being hypothetical, but hey, we're not in a position to win a championship this year. Like,
he can't even stay on the court.
He's not healthy. Like, this is the healthiest we've probably had him. The fact somebody else is willing to pay him the 30-something million, let's break up that contract. Hopefully we can rehab these dudes a little bit to the point where there's some more value and we can move off of them down the road. But it becomes easier. It's easier to trade 18 million or whatever they're making versus the 30-something million that Porzingis is making when he's not playing. And I think that's the important aspect there, that that's how their view of it was. Yeah. Let's break up the contract and hopefully this will lead to other moves down the road.
That's fair. Yeah.
I like that take. Yeah, I like that take a lot. I also don't really like this move for Washington either. Like, it's fine, I guess.
Yeah, I guess it helps them more long term in the sense that, like, they don't have that extra year of Bertans on the books, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, I think it makes sense from that standpoint. They brought back Ish Smith. So I don't, like, I think Dinwiddie was kind of, not that they're on the same level, but I think that made Dinwiddie, like, easier to part with because you still have, like, a real point guard on the floor who can, you know, who can attack into the paint and who can get guys involved, more importantly. So I think that helps it. And I guess it just depends on, and we don't have to get deep in this conversation. We've done this for 3 years now, but like, it just depends on what you think Bradley Beal is going to do there. Right.
All right.
Like I do think that if he decides he wants out and they end up trading him, sign and trade, whatever that ends up being, then I think they're better set up to like quick rebuild with like clearing the books and everything by doing that deal. If it's to try to convince him to want to stay, I don't know if Kristaps is the right bargaining chip to be like, all right, look, we got you a guy. Like, I don't think that's going to work.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the thing. Hey, we got you a big piece, my man. Yeah. Big piece. Yeah. It's Kevin, or it's Kristaps Porzingis. Yeah.
It's like, also interesting from Dallas's perspective, this deal, because what's made them good this year is their defense.
Yes.
And this didn't make their defense better.
No, but it didn't hurt it either, right?
I don't know. I mean, Porzingis has issues, but
he's a presence to block shots. Like, I don't know.
When he's right, I think he's at least a little bit of a rim protector. He can do a little bit more stuff in that sense. Like,
he's missed 20 games.
The other
games,
guy's Bertans.
Like, he's missed 20 games.
Bertans is Mr. Ole.
For sure. Bertans is horrible on defense, but like, Porzingis has missed 20 games. It's not like he was out there anchoring that shit. Like they've just managed to compete regardless of who's on the floor.
Right. I mean, nobody's going like expecting big things from Porzingis right now in Washington.
Right.
Right. We're not looking at that going like this is a major trade for them. This was just hey, you take our one really bad big contract and we'll take two of your bad contracts.
Is this the first time Latvians have been traded for each other in the NBA? Did anyone dig into that?
You know what? Sounds like you got a story idea. You should have Jade cut this out. You don't want to give these things up.
I'll just have Mark Stein do it. He's way more connected and cares way more about that stuff. All right. What about a winner from the trade deadline? Jay, who's your winner from the trade deadline?
I'm going to go with...
Good.
Philly.
Really?
Good long pause there.
To get that, Philly. Get that second guy?
Yeah, I just think... Like I said, they went from no chance to win a championship to, I don't know what percentage it is, but it's sizable. Like it's not close to zero anymore. Mm.
Yeah.
And I just think that's really important. And that matters to me more than anything. And I do think like the long-term risk of this is real and it may hurt. It may hurt a lot.
Especially if he's getting 62. At 37.
but they turned a dude who literally was not playing, refused to play basketball for them, into a guy who, when he's right and when he's healthy, is a top 5 or 7 player in the NBA.
Yeah. Yeah, because I don't think you can look at it of what they lost anymore. Well, I guess with Seth Curry, that's a loss, right? But you can't look at it like they had already lost that with Ben Simmons. Like, that was now never going to be something that they were... They could be like, well, we are giving up this guy. Like, he was gone, right? So you do have to kind of change the way that you think about most trades in that scenario. Mo, who's a winner of the deadline for you?
I think the Phoenix Suns. Partly, I think just the quiet little moves that they made, picking up Torrey Craig is another guy that's going to help them. You know, just adding more depth.
I'll forever believe in Aaron Holiday. Forever.
And exactly. Yeah. And Aaron Holiday, right? And then, but then just the other thing, too, is nobody made a move in the West. They should have them worried, right? Like, nobody made a game-changing move to the point that you got to go like, damn, they're going to be in competition, you know, against the Suns in the West. I think the Suns are, you know, pretty much head and shoulders above everybody else in the Western Conference, unless Draymond Green comes back fully healthy. And I'm not sure that's going to be the case. I think just for Phoenix, this was a win for them.
Yeah, I like that. I think that's accurate.
I like that. I like that, too. Yeah. I love claiming that. Getting Torrey Craig.
I'm leaving the podcast on that high note.
The finals last year after trading for Torrey Craig. Let's do it again.
I'm leaving on a high note. You guys both agreed with something? I'm out. See ya.
No, you weren't contributing that much in the first place. We can do it without
you. My man thinks Torrey Craig and Aaron Holiday are the winners of the trade deadline. That's like when Zach said last year Nemanja Bjelica was the winner.
Hey, man.
That was the best
trade
of the deadline.
You saw how he played in those two games in that series? He was a lights out. He was lighting them up. He should have been played more. That's on Spo. All right.
Wow.
That's a failure.
Okay. Okay.
All right. I'm going to go with, and this will transition to our next conversation, Boston Celtics. I love what they did. They bring back Daniel Tice, who, like, and having him as a third big man instead of instead of Ennis, like that's a massive upgrade. And then I love the pickup of Derek White. I don't think they gave up too much for it. Like if you think about, all right, they gave up this first round pick, right? And there's very little chance that that guy that ends up getting selected with that pick ends up being as good as Derek White. And I just think like now you have him, you have Marcus Smart out there to make plays on both ends of the floor. You can really like that defense is so good, Jay, right now. And you just picked up Derek White. Like they can unleash hell defensively and really make that even more of their identity. And I just think that that was, you know, it was a little bit Doc Rivers and getting Daniel Tice, right? For Brad Stevens and like, hey, my guy, like especially after doing that with Al Horford in the offseason, but going and getting Derek White, like, I think that is a brilliant pickup. And they've been so good lately. They're so good defensively. You're seeing it gel a lot more. Any idea that they were going to break up Tatum and Brown, I think was always a supreme overreaction. And I don't think they were ever going to consider that. But to now increase that depth, because I just like you didn't lose anything with Schroeder leaving, right? You didn't lose anything with Ennis leaving. You didn't lose anything. Like, all right, Josh Richardson can contribute. He was knocking down shots. He's a solid defender. Like, that's something to replace. You can replace that with Derek White. Daniel Tice for depth. You replace that. Like, I think they went from having a bunch of questions with their bench, and I don't know if they're planning on starting Derek or bringing him off the bench, but either way, the way you can stagger that stuff, I think that they really improved their depth going into this final stretch.
Yeah, I think this was kind of doubling down by Brad Stevens on a formula that he thinks really works. Like, their starting lineup with Marcus Smart at point guard just has plus size everywhere. Yeah. And has been unbelievable defensively this year. And if you look back the last 3 weeks, Celtics have played with a totally different purpose. They've played a totally different brand of basketball. They are cutting. They are moving the ball. They are doing the things Ime Udoka wants. And so they wanted to add to the formula that has worked for them lately. And getting Derek White, who's sort of Marcus Smart-ish, allows them to have those jumbo lineups if they want at all times. And I think, like, in the playoff series, I think they might even have like a 7-man rotation with just Derek White and Grant Williams as their two guys off the bench.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And you only have really good defenders. Like, it's all really good defenders. This could be playoff wise because they have no holes, because Marcus Smart and Derek White, who can guard anyone from fours to point guards, are their two ball handlers. Like, they could have an unbelievable defense. There are offensive questions. There are shooting questions.
For sure.
Yeah. There are questions about how they get from where they are now to becoming a title contender down the road. But I think they think they've found what can work for them next to Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown.
And they have an identity, right? Like, yeah, like
they still
have questions offensively. Yeah. I'm with you. And even the approach of their two stars, like, well, mostly Tatum, when it comes to like that late game stuff, like, yeah, I still have plenty of questions about that and plenty of doubts, but I'm like, for a team that just knows what the fuck they are, like, the Celtics know, like, we are going to be held defensively. You may beat us, but like, we are going to be held defensively. And I think that matters.
And that's where White, I think the closing stuff, I think that's where White makes the biggest impact, is because they had Schroeder a lot in the closing lineup before. Number one, teams attack him. Number two, he was an ISO heavy guy. Yeah. In next to two guys in Tatum and Brown, who when they resort to their worst habits are ISO heavy guys too. And it just didn't work. And so you get White in there and all of a sudden you're huge. You can play defense. You've got guys who can dribble, pass, not necessarily all of them shoot, but they're going to be great defensively. And they just have a lot more IQ now than they did before the deadline. And I think the IQ part is huge too.
The most important thing is, and Jay, you know how I feel about the Celtics offense. He's another ball mover.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he's not a guy.
He can really pass.
He's not going to just hold on to it when the ball gets to him. He's going to swing. He's going to look to make the right plays. He's going to find all those movements. All your points on the defensive end are accurate. He's going to be the guy that's going to chase around Trae Young and have to hound him on the court if they play Atlanta at any point in the playoffs. In those scenarios, Darius Garland, all of those things. And it allows Marcus Smart to be able to kind of rotate over and provide help in those instances and things like that, and kind of relieve Smart
in terms of not having to burn all of that energy. And I think this is something we've seen from the Celtics in this hot run of theirs right now, is just how well they're moving the ball. He's going to slide right into that. But it all comes down to, at the end of the day, can him and Smart shoot well enough so that they're able to make it so defenses don't pack the paint against them on offense? Yeah, I think that's going to be the biggest challenge. Yeah,
maybe not. Yeah, yeah.
But even then, at least you know they're going to defend. So the other team is going to have to at least find a way to score on them as well. So I think that's going to be the challenge there. But everything you guys said, like, this nails it. Like, this was a great, great trade deadline for Steve.
Yeah, I also agree with me. I think with this team, it's I think before, I think they were going to get rolled in the playoffs. Like, I really do. I think they were going to be just mismatches, lack of depth. I think they were going to get rolled in the first round. Now, like, I could see them upsetting someone. Like, I don't think they would upset Milwaukee or Miami, but I could see them upsetting anybody else in a first round matchup. Like, I really do. Like, I don't have any doubts about them making it through the play-in tournament anymore. And I think that, like, I probably wouldn't believe that they can get into the conference finals. Although after what the Hawks did last year, anything's possible. So maybe I shouldn't say that. But I can definitely see them in the second round, and I could not see that before.
And I think too, like, because Tatum and Brown are very similar players, when you run them in actions at the end of games, like, teams just switch it. It's auto switch. They have the two best defenders on them. You don't get much help. But now if you have Smart and White out there with him, you've got jumbo guard. So we saw it against Denver. They had Campazzo out there, and they just put Derek White or Marcus Smart in the screening action and just...
Oh, they were killing him.
Try to mash Campazzo.
Took him apart
and put Denver in some bad spots because of that. And, you know, they try to do that sometimes with Josh Richardson or Dennis Schroeder. Those guys don't have the IQ. It's like, even when Tatum Brown made the right read to get it to those guys, it was... That's where it stopped a lot of the time. And White and Smart can keep the ball moving, can capitalize on that, and they're bigger.
Yeah.
Much bigger.
For sure.
So I think that's where it'll help a lot too.
I'll go ahead.
Towards the end of that game that Derek White had is exactly what you were describing, Jay, right? Like, White slips, Jaylen Brown hits him with a great pass, and he gets a big and one because Campazzo's chasing at that point. It's exactly that type of stuff. And the team, they just got smarter. It's just at the end of the day, you're just looking at that going, like, that's going to take them so far.
Before we go, and it's a few days old at this point, so I don't want to spend too much time on it, and I could not give a shit about breaking down the rosters of Team LeBron versus Team Kevin Durant. Like, that doesn't mean anything. But
the show
itself, the execution of the draft itself, and the trolling of Kevin Durant, which, one, I thought he did a brilliant job of not breaking, right? Of keeping a stone face no matter what. Like, he cracked a smile a couple of times, but for the most part, what an incredible poker face that he had throughout that whole thing, which was the opposite of LeBron having to hold up a clipboard in front of his face every 40 seconds because he was laughing so hard at the trolling he was doing of the Harden trade in the situation. And I just thought the way the studio team handled it with Shaq and Kenny and Ernie and Charles, and then the way LeBron was egging things on and KD got to play the straight man there, like, that was some of the best sports television I have ever seen.
I mean, it was amazing in the sense of I had no idea the draft was on the same day as the deadline.
Perfect timing.
I look up and I'm like, oh my god, this is happening. This is amazing.
Oh, so good, man. That was also so funny. Like, I usually find LeBron to be super corny. He was so funny during that show.
That was also the only way Rudy Gobert was going to avoid being the last pick.
Just set that up to just keep avoiding taking James. Like, what? Just brilliance out of LeBron. Like, absolute brilliance. And then they're just like selling KD, just like, well, you know, you need some size in there. You're gonna need a present inside. And he's like, yeah, you're right. You know, LeBron's got a lot of size and length. Okay, yeah, I'll take Rudy Gobert. Just perfect. Absolute. Perfect execution of a brilliant trolling. Oh my god.
Oh man. It was great.
If you haven't seen it, go to YouTube or whatever the hell you watch videos these days. You just gotta find it. Like, it's so good. It's so worth it. Like, even if you're over these studio shows or whatever, this was perfect television. Absolutely.
Durant's reaction to the Harden deal has been pretty funny.
Yeah.
because he's come out like, yep, both sides got what they wanted. nice to have guys who actually want to be here. It's crazy how quickly that went south. They played such beautiful basketball when they were healthy last season, man. Like,
and it was crazy.
It's too bad that for a whole long list of reasons, they never recaptured that.
It's just fun. Like, it's kind of, I think, a little bit to the point that I tried to make earlier of just like, we never know like the longevity of any of this stuff that looks great, you know? And this is a perfect, like, this didn't even get a chance to get off the ground because of the injuries, because of the mandate.
What a wild year.
It's nuts. You think about what Sean Marks must have been thinking in mid-January of last season, right? Like, holy shit, I got James Harden. We got KD and Kyrie. Like, we're on top of the world. We're not going to.
They looked unbeatable. Oh, my God.
They
beat the piss out of the Bucks early in that season.
Oh, for sure. Absolutely. And
they only had two guys healthy.
Yeah. Like, they were 5-1 in the playoffs with those three guys together, right? They played 16 games total. They were like 13-3 in those 16 games, like putting up 120 points per 100 possessions. Like, it was unstoppable unless there's a vaccine mandate and a hamstring issue and a knee injury. Like, then it looks very beatable and it looks like 10 losses in a row. That's what it looks like.
It's weird because at once, I think everyone, when that group got assembled, just figured something would happen. That's one of them at least would get dissatisfied and the whole thing would kind of crumble. Or at least there was serious potential for that, but the way it happened was just
oh my God,
surreal.
It's just surreal. Unbelievable.
Absolutely surreal.
Nothing else to say. It's the biggest what if we're gonna get for a long time,
and the most outrageous what if.
Yeah, you know, no, they just got stuck between,
like, it wasn't just injuries.
No. It was like the highest of drama that you could script. Like, they just really got stuck between a rock and a hard place. And that's gonna do it for episode of the Basket Buds edition of the Athletic NBA Show podcast. Make sure you subscribe to the athletic.com, the best coverage of sports. Now that we're done with the trade deadline, get ready for that stretch run, maybe coverage of whenever the hell baseball comes around, obviously the Super Bowl and all that stuff, and all the fallout of the NFL season. I hear we got soccer, I hear we got hockey, we got all kinds of stuff that you would want. So make sure you subscribe to The Athletic. Check out all the other podcasts on The Athletic Podcast Network, all the team shows. Make sure you check out No Dunks. Make sure you check out Michelle Beadle's podcast, What Did I Miss with Michelle Beadle. Check all that stuff for Mo Dacchio, for Jade Hoyer, for Jay King. I'm Zach Harper. Keep it locked on The Athletic.
You guys get it? Rocking a hard place, like rocking a hard place.
I believe that to me is no big deal. Some guy calling me a boy.